It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 140. I am your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined in this episode by my brother, Matt. We talk mainly spring football. What are the major storylines that will make a difference for the 2014 version of the Cougars? Who is Taysom Hill's backup? Can he become an elite passer? And who are other position and defensive players we think will have the biggest impact in 2014? We then talk a little bit about the Cougars' one game in the West Coast Conference and whether that changes our opinion on the eventual outcome. We also talk a little bit about Jabari Parker and Jemmer Fredette. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Catch us on iTunes. Check out LoyalCougars.com for great Cougar coverage. And listen to us right now. Matt, podcast time. And luckily, we're not talking about BYU getting bounced in the first round of the West Coast Conference Tournament.
Yeah, that was close.
Well, you know, I don't know if it was close, but they were in it for a while, the Loyola Marymount team. But anyway, before we get to that, I'm going to give our agenda for today. So this is going to seem backwards, but we're going to talk about basketball last. And why are we talking about basketball last, Matt?
Well, I don't know.
The reason, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you right now. Because some of you are going to end up listening to this podcast after Monday night's game. We're recording this on Sunday night. No, we're not. We're not recording it on Sunday. I mean, early Monday morning.
It is 12:01 where I am.
No, the sun went down, so it's no longer the Sabbath.
Is that the way it works?
No. Anyway, but some of you are going to end up listening to this later in the week, and you're not going to care about the basketball, what we have to say, because a game or two will have happened since. So, today we're going to talk about football first and then basketball at the end. And so if you want to hear the basketball stuff, but if you get done with the football stuff and it's already Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, when you're listening to this, you can just turn us off because it won't be that interesting because, you know, things will have happened, Matt.
Hey, listen, it'll still be interesting.
That's true. It will still be interesting. So you should at listen least, to the whole thing.
At least the parts where when I talk.
Wow. Wow, really? We're already starting. I mean, we're like 90 seconds into this. Really?
It's a pretty slow start, if you ask me.
It's a terribly slow start. This is our worst start ever. So, Matt, this time of year makes me happy.
It's a special time.
I'm not talking about daylight savings time, which is a ridiculous sham perpetuated on the American people. But let's not go into that. I might be a little bitter as the father of small children having to deal with daylight savings time. It's frigging annoying, especially when you have 11 o'clock church. But anyway, baseball, Matt. Baseball is upon us. Spring training games are happening. Position battles are forming. And both of our teams are likely to win their division. Well, okay, your team isn't. But they could make the playoffs.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, really?
They can. Oh. They can do it.
Well, actually, according to FanGraphs, which is my favorite geeky baseball site, they are the projected winners, Matt, of the NL East, four games over the Braves. So FanGraphs is not a huge believer in the new Braves and actually has the Nationals as the superior team. So there's
that. I'm not a big fan of the Braves either.
I know you're not. I know you're not. You're hoping the Braves crash and burn.
Yes, I am.
But you know what I'm really most excited about? Is that they have the Yankees finishing third again. And only a game ahead of the Jays and four games ahead of the Orioles. So after all this money, how great would it be if the Yankees spent all this money and finished dead last in the AL East?
It'd be the best.
You know, they added Jacoby Ellsbury, who's now a trader. But he's a rich trader, so he probably feels okay about it. But if you look at, they lost Cano. One Cano is worth McCann and Ellsbury. So, you know what I mean? Like, I know everyone's talking about that, but Cano is really good. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just like lose Cano and be like, ah, we signed this other guy. He's all right. Anywho, what are, you got any spring training storylines, in the Nationals or otherwise you're interested in?
No, I'm just kind of trying to soak it all in. I've watched a couple of games.
Yeah,
it's fun here to have that that MLB app.
Yes. We have sung its praises before.
Oh, thing is awesome.
It's one of the greatest creations of all time. I'm talking about like up there with the light bulb, flight, the wheel. It's up there with all of those, Matt.
It really is, though.
It really is. I mean, I can watch any game that I want from my phone, my computer, my Apple TV.
Do you know what? Who I can't watch, though, are the Houston Astros.
That seems like it's actually an advantage.
I can't get them on TV because I have DirecTV, and yes, Comcast is evil.
Comcast, I have.
And
Comcast,
I can't get them on the MLB thing because I live in Houston, so I'm blacked out.
Well, you know, they're projected to win 67 games. They won 51 last year.
Okay. So some of those players are ready for the majors. Okay.
Some of those players. Well, did you see the thing about the Marlins owner being ticked off that the Red Sox weren't sending their A team or many of their starters to go play him, and their spring training sites are not very close to each other? And I saw a couple of tweets from Boston writers saying, well, it was only fair to send a minor leaguers to play a minor league team. I thought that was pretty good.
Zing!
Zing! Yeah, your team won 62 games last year, Jeffrey Loria. So if we were in like the Premier League, you guys would have been relegated. So not really interested in what you have to say.
Did you just make a soccer reference?
I did. I'm following the Premier League.
Okay.
My team is Liverpool. I picked a team.
Your team's got the word liver in it.
And pool.
Liverpool. I think that can be corrected with surgery.
Hey, that's a place. You've just insulted our listeners from England.
Okay.
Do we have any listeners from
England? I'm very concerned about that piece of the demographic.
Hey, now. The world is our campus, okay? The world is our campus.
The campus is our world.
That's right. Did I ever tell you the time about one of my buddies was coming through driving from California back to Massachusetts, where he was going to school in California? Anyway, he's driving through. He stopped by Provo. This was, I think, my freshman year, and we're hanging out on campus, and he sees the box where, of course, newspapers. Some of you young listeners won't know what that means, but they used to print the news on paper. Anyway, and he saw that it was called the Daily Universe, and he's like, really? You guys think you deserve the universe? Like, that's right. That's right, we do. That's right. The world is our campus. All right, Matt. So speaking of the world being our campus, is this the worst open we've ever had?
No. We've had worse than this.
Oh, you're right. We have had worse.
This one probably won't get deleted.
No, I'm too lazy now. Too lazy. People just have to put up with our mediocrity. What am I saying? It's 140 episodes in. If they didn't like mediocre, they still wouldn't be listening, right?
That's right. We are the kings of mediocre. Well, dang, no, more straight. like the princes, maybe.
Yeah, minor duke.
We're kind of in the middle of mediocrity.
Yeah. So Matt, let's talk spring football storylines, okay? So
yes, sir.
I'm going to throw some storylines at you, and we're going to talk about them. That's how this is going to work.
All right, that sounds fair.
So one of the things that always gets talked about, and you never know if it's going to come into play or not, and this year we have a starting quarterback in Taysom Hill, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a backup quarterback that nobody's quite sure who it is. Now, why does this matter? Do we think Taysom Hill, if he stays healthy, takes every meaningful snap this year?
Yes.
Put that on a scale of percentile percents. 100%? 90%? 85% sure?
100% of the meaningful snaps? Or how sure am I that he is the premier starter?
Yes. How sure are you that he doesn't 100%. Lose his job?
100%. 104%.
I am also 100%. I do not think he loses his job. Okay. So, he's not going to lose his job. That's good. So now it goes to injury, right? And that's where it always, you just have no idea. He has been injured before, but was healthy all last season, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how important do you think it is to, or how much do we have to worry about who the backup quarterback is? Are you concerned about who the backup quarterback is?
Not even a little.
Not even a little. Like, nope. You won't really be watching this.
No. Well, yeah, I'll watch it because I care.
Sure.
But I think that the... I mean, yeah, sure, there's always a chance of a freak injury, you know, you just don't know. But that guy's never going to see the light of day.
No.
And if he does, we've got really big problems.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? If they do, that's a problem. So you have as the backups for this year, redshirt senior walk-on Christian Stewart, right? Mm-hmm. And Billy Green, who's a sophomore, as the third string. And those are the two we're going to focus on here, Matt, okay? So as we look at those two, one of them is likely to become the guy that did it. Now, they redshirted Stewart, which seems to be an indicator that they wanted him to keep around, okay? Mm-hmm. And then Green is a guy that was recruited, you know, pretty heavily, you know, but he'll be redshirted possibly this year, right? Depending on if they decide to make him the backup. So there's a couple things at play here. Based on who these guys are, Matt, do you have someone that you think is most likely to emerge as the backup?
I would say probably Billy Green.
And pourquoi, as they say in the French.
I think he's the quarterback of the future. And so if I were them, and you have a spot at the number two that you need to fill, somebody who's going to be getting those reps, somebody that you're going to want to prepare to go in, that's the guy I would choose. There's nobody else on this list with any meaningful experience that's going to make me take them over the younger Billy Green.
Yeah, so Christian Stewart played at Snow, right? And that's where mm-hmm. people will say, well, he's got some experience over, say, Billy Green hasn't played since high school a couple years ago. They're both similar size. They're both, you know, have skills that have been pointed out, at least by the coaching staff in the past. Obviously, they were brought onto the roster for a reason. But as you kind of look at it, Green's the one with the pedigree. I don't know if that counts here, but he was recruited by some big schools. And as you said, he has a shot to be a quarterback in the future, as opposed to Christian Stewart, who obviously is a senior. The only thing he'll ever do, barring Taysom Hill's injury, is be a backup, right? He That's was cool. never considered part of the future of this. But Billy Green, depending on if he were to redshirt or not, he could be the starter in 2016.
That's right.
Now, we don't know that for certain. A lot can happen in a couple years. There's obviously Tanner Rangum will be back from his mission and those type of things. So you don't know. But Billy Green is at least there. And that's why I think that they're going to redshirt Billy Green if they can. But I think if Hill gets hurt, that's the guy that plays. Does that jive with you?
Yeah, so you're saying, you know, mop-up duty, those types of things probably go to a Christian Stewart.
Christian Stewart or whoever else is on the roster who they don't mind burning a year.
But you want to save Billy Green.
You want to save Billy Green if Hill blows out his knee in game two. I think Green is either in the game then or shortly thereafter. But I think you'll see them split things pretty evenly in spring. But when fall comes, you'll see Christian Stewart taking most of the reps behind. But, you know, I could be totally wrong. They may have faith in Stewart that I don't know, right? They may think, wow, this guy is just, it's bad timing, right? You know, could have been here, but I think if they
really... He could have been somebody. He could have been a contender.
Could have been a contender. But I think if they felt that highly of him, you know, I think he would have been in the picture even, say, last year, right?
Well, yeah, and even in that being said, I mean, you asked Bronco Mendenhall this past week. They asked him, who's your number two quarterback? And the answer to that was a shoulder shrug.
Right, right.
You know, if he had a lot of faith in Christian Stewart as the backup here, I think that would have been his answer.
Yeah, and obviously Ammon Olsen transferring threw all this up into the air.
That's right.
Because, you know, Olsen was the backup last year and would have, in theory, been the backup this year. Okay, so that's a question that you and I think hopefully will not ever be something we talk about during the season.
That's right.
So another intriguing storyline to me is Bronson Cafusi. So last year, Bronson Cafusi was a down lineman. And we also know he also likes to knock down All-American basketball players and growl at them. Right? He likes that too. But he was a down lineman, and he has been converted to a linebacker as kind of the replacement. We talked about this a little. I don't remember if it was last podcast or the podcast before. But the point is, Bronson Cafusi is going to be a linebacker. I believe Mendenhall called him Skinny Bronson.
Yeah.
That he dropped 25 pounds. He's still 6'7", so he didn't shrink. So he's more like 260 to 265 is what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
So he can play both as a down lineman, but also as that outside linebacker. So we've seen how athletic he is, Matt. We talked about how the scout we had on, Tom Melton, really likes Cafusi's athleticism. What are your expectations for him at the outside linebacker? Obviously, we're not going to say he's going to be the second coming of Kyle Vannoy. That's unfair. But what do you expect out of him based on what we've seen from him before?
Well, I expect them to use him a little bit differently than they used, say, Kyle Vannoy, because the skill set here is a little bit different. But I wouldn't be, you know, we're going to see him rush the quarterback a little bit. And it sounds to me like they feel like he can create some opportunity for some interceptions because of his reach.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to see. I don't know that there's a lot of defenses out there that have an outside linebacker who's 6'7".
Well, you know, you remember they did this quite a bit against some teams where Vannoy would, you know, teams love to run that quick out route, you know, that's really common mm-hmm. in the college game. And they would put him, Vannoy, right in that passing lane. You remember that. He's picked up some interceptions and some pass breakups. Imagine seeing that as the quarterback, but now it's a 6'7", dude.
Yeah.
With athleticism, right? Not some 6'7", you know, nose tackle. Some guy that can jump. And I think it's going to work. I think he's quite talented, and I think he'll do a great job out there. I mean, as I said, it's not going to be Kyle Vannoy out there. But I think
I don't think he's going to put his hand in the dirt a lot. I think he's going to be coming out of a 2-point stance most of the time.
Yep.
Because if for no other reason than to keep everybody guessing, and give him some visibility of what's going on at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I totally agree. So Matt, if I had asked you, without looking, what year Fua is, what would you have said?
Sophomore, junior.
See, I would have said junior. He is a senior, Matt.
Yeah, I know.
And so I don't know why I thought he was going into his junior year, had played as a sophomore. So he's on that other side of that outside linebacker. We've talked about him before. He's also extremely athletic. I think there could be some crazy plays by this core linebackers, because those are some big, they're big guys, very tall, and very, both of them very athletic. Fua's 6'5", Cafusi's 6'7". So, I like you said, there aren't many outside linebackers at 6'7". There aren't many at 6'5", you know?
And Fua can hit some folks.
He can hit, and
he'll mess people up. Yep,
and
he can run fast.
They can, you know, they can do some of the things they did with Vannoy last year in dropping both of these guys back into coverage. Whether they're as smart in coverage as Vannoy was, That's a different thing, but they certainly have the physical talents to do that. So, Matt, new wide receiver group. We've talked about them a lot in the past few podcasts. So if you look at this group, I think some of the coaches are talking about the speed of it. Certainly there are fans that are excited about this group, and obviously everybody's optimistic when it's spring football. What do you think out of this group? If I had to give you better or worse than last year's group, which would you take on a bet?
And we're saying better or worse as a whole?
As a whole. Not, I mean, obviously we don't expect anybody to be good as Cody Hoffman. But you and I talked about this so many times during the season that the rest of the group underperformed, whether it was injuries, skill, maybe even some Taysom Hill, maybe it was the new offense, but whatever it was, they underperformed as a group outside of Cody Hoffman. Fair?
That is fair.
So do we see this group of wide receivers as a whole eclipsing what was accomplished by the wide receiver group last year, which quite frankly, outside of Cody Hoffman, wouldn't be too hard to do?
I think we're going to see more than one receiver get looks. I think the ball's going to spread out a little bit more. You know, you got Mitch Matthews, a little bit more experience. He's not Cody Hoffman, right?
Right.
But I think he's going to be a year better. Nick Kurtz, I'm really excited about.
Yep.
You know, every time of year, every year at this time, Ross Oppo is awesome, right? So you just, maybe this will be the year.
Maybe it will.
So right now, I'm pretty optimistic about this group of wide receivers.
I am finding myself similarly optimistic. Like, I want to be pessimistic, because if you look at last year, the second receiver on our team with catches was Skylar Ridley, gone. Obviously, the top receiver's gone. J.D. Falslev was the third receiver. He's gone. So you have coming back, the most catches from last year coming back is Mitch Matthews with 23.
Yeah.
That's not a lot of catches. No. And then Jamal Williams with 18. And then Oppo, 14 catches last year in 12 games.
Yeah, there's like 4 billion receivers on this roster right now.
I know.
I mean, it's a pretty big group, and one of the things I like about it is you just scan the group. You've got players from junior colleges, you got a transfer from Utah State. You got some people who have played football at a level above high school.
Yes.
At some other places. And so that makes you think maybe somebody in here is going to break out.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you buy Nick Kurtz as being called a potential 4.5 40, which would make him really fast for a BYU wide receiver, or for anybody really? 4.5 is pretty good speed. So what's your take? Do you think if he's that fast, let me tell, because we don't know how fast he is. If he's that fast, what does that mean for the offense?
Oh, it's going to be awesome. If he's really that fast, it's going to really open some stuff up in the passing game.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And like you said, there's so many guys on the roster. I just feel good about 3 or 4 of these guys breaking out, that you've mm-hmm. got a group. So I'm with you. I think they're better than last year's group. And I don't think Oppo is part of whatever ends up happening.
No, the focal piece is going to be Nick Kurtz.
It's going to be Kurtz. It's going to be Matthews. And who's the third one that comes in? Jordan Leslie, the transfer you mentioned before from UTEP. Another JC transfer, Devin Blackman, Trey Dye, and there's a host of others that will be on the roster, both scholarship and walk on. And you never know. But I'm with you. Nick Kurtz is the one to watch this year.
Yeah, no Dennis Pitta was a walk-on. I mean, yeah. you just never know.
No, you don't. You don't. And some of these guys, and I, in case people think we're hating on Oppo, I would love for him to break out and be a star this year. I that would be fantastic, right?
I think for him it's about health. I think he's been more injured worse and more often than they're really letting anybody believe.
I agree with you.
Which is unfortunate, because I think he does get a reputation for maybe is he not working as hard? Does he have a bad attitude? I really think it's injuries that have hampered his career.
Yeah, and if you go back, and we've talked about this before, that those first few games of 2011, they weren't spectacular, right? But they were really good for a freshman. Mm-hmm. 4 catches, 3 catches, 5 catches. And then he had a couple more 5-catch games later on in that 2011 season. And since then, Matt, he has not had a 5-catch game. He's had several 4-catch games, 2, 3. And last year, due to injury and some other things, he had a bunch of zeros where he actually played in the game but never caught a pass. He's got talent. I hope it comes together for him, but I wouldn't be holding my breath on it. So, Matt, one of the other stories I read this week was about, you know, Taysom Hill and whether he can become an elite passer. So we already know he's an elite runner, right? I mean, is there any disputing that he's one of the best running quarterbacks in college football?
I think he's awesome.
He is very good at running, and he's certainly the best running quarterback we've ever had. Sorry, Steve Young. But just based statistically, at least. So if you look at that, but if you look at the last his last three games last season, including the bowl game, okay? 24 carries for 101 yards, 26 carries for 154, and 31 carries for 133. Okay? He had in Washington, we've talked about this before, 31 carries and 48 pass attempts. But his yard per attempt average of 6.7 is quite pedestrian. Now, he had some good games in the middle of the season, but if you take the season as a whole, he really struggled in some games throwing the football. Both accuracy at the beginning of the year, but still at the end of the year, he had some issues against Wisconsin and even against Notre Dame and Washington. So let's say we fast forward 12 months. Percent chance that we are talking about Taysom Hill going in for his senior season as a Heisman Trophy candidate. Give me your odds.
It's a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Yeah, we'll start there and we'll move our way down.
33%.
33%. I'm going 15%.
Really?
15%. Yeah, I mean, Heisman Trophy candidate.
Yeah, but look at this schedule. I mean, he should.
That's true. That's
he
true.
Should light this schedule up.
He should light this schedule up. That's true. I mean, UConn should be a very nice start. We'll see about Texas, but he should, by the time he hits Central Florida, which we've talked about is one of the, besides Texas, one of the biggest tests on the schedule, he could be in a really good rhythm. Okay, so let's take it down a notch. Chance that, so last year he completed, I don't know where are his stats, I just had them. He completed last year 53.9% of his passes, over under 58.5% of his passes next season.
Under, but barely.
I'm going under, but just barely as well. Okay. So 6.7 yards per attempt, which is quite mediocre. Over or under 7.5 yards per attempt.
Over. He's got a deep threat now.
I'm going over as well. I think
not that he didn't have a deep threat before, but the fact was you could cover Hoffman because there was no one else to throw to.
Well, and Hoffman had speed, but if Kurtz is supposed to be faster, right?
Right, but Hoffman could carry a defender down the field and still catch the ball.
Yes, and jump over people, which we don't know if Kurtz has that. I mean, he has the size, but I don't know if he's that body control in the air. That's not something you get just because you're tall, right? So I'm with you. I also think part of it has to do with the schedule, okay? Last year, Texas, you know, as bad as that defense looked, for some reason, we couldn't pass against them, but he did run for 259 yards against them, obviously. But we played some good defenses last year that kept some of his numbers down. I don't know if we're playing a team as good as Wisconsin's defense was last year.
No.
I don't think we have one. I don't think there's a single team like that on the current roster. We may be proven wrong, right? But I don't think there is. So I'm with you, but I don't think any of us are going to be calling him an elite passer next year. Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
No, he's going to be known as a runner. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be.
So 246 carries last year, okay? He had, I think five games with more than 20 carries. 235 carries for Taysom Hill next year, over or under?
Over.
I'm taking the under. I'm going to take the under. I think because of this schedule and also if Jamal Williams, they're not as worried about him getting hurt, he'll get more carries. I think he's going to have a little less than that, but close to that. Do you think it's a lot more, or do you think it's similar to what he carried last year?
I think it's going to be similar to what he carried last year. I do believe that there is that Jamal Williams factor. But the other thing, too, is I think we're going to get up on teams early. Mm.
And then
so
we just
I see the ball on the ground a little bit, enough to keep him up in that range at least.
So Jamal Williams last year carried the ball 33 times against Virginia and 30 times against Texas, gets hurt in the Utah game, and never carries the ball more than 21 times as he did against Boise State. And carries the ball 12 times in the bowl game, which was perplexing to me. So I don't know how much they're going to use Jamal Williams, but I'm going to assume he way outdoes the 217 carries he had last year, which means he's stealing some carries from Taysom. That's kind of what I hope, actually. That's kind of what I hope. But that being said, Matt, if you had 1 yard to get, who do you want running the ball, Jamal Williams or Taysom Hill?
Jamal Williams.
Me too. See, that's the weird thing. He's not getting as many carries, but I think everybody feels that way. His power, when he hits the hole, he can carry people.
Yeah, and in that situation, that's not what Taysom Hill's designed to do.
No.
You know, it's not that 1 yard up the middle or anywhere between the tackles that you want Taysom Hill to do.
No, you want him on the outside making a linebacker miss.
And yes.
He will make the linebacker miss.
Yes.
Most of the time. And he's big enough to run over a defensive back. And Jamal Williams certainly can run over defensive backs, too. I feel good about our rushing game. Next year, I think we will still be a rushing team. Do you believe that's true?
Yeah, that's what a go fast, go hard, this, you know, quick snap offense is about. You have to run the football effectively, and you have to run the football a lot.
Yeah, I think I've heard people talk about, well, you know, they might balance it out a little bit more, and they may end up balancing it out certainly, but if you look at, you know, the total offense last year, there was 3,400 yards rushing, and where's the total passing? I don't know, like 3,000 yards passing. So a little less than 3,000. So, I mean, I think it's going to be the same next year, the ratio. You?
Yeah, I think it's going to be about the same.
About the same. Okay.
Yeah.
So we are now going to do what we do best, Matt. We're going to draft.
Oh, no.
The most important people not named Taysom Hill next season for the BYU Football Cougars.
Oh, so Taysom's off the table here.
Taysom's off the table. He's easy. Easy, too easy. So neither of us get to pick him.
Okay.
You believe he's the most important piece to next year's puzzle, right?
Yes.
We both agree. Okay. Where we may disagree is who is next on that list. So this will be fun. As usual, I will let you pick first because I am magnanimous.
Is this a snake draft? So I'm going to pick once, then you're going to pick twice?
Absolutely. That's why I'm letting you go first.
How many rounds are we doing?
Three. We each get three players. And this is who you think is most important. Let's define that for a second. If this person was injured, their impact is the biggest. Okay? And that's how we're defining. If Hill gets hurt, we're host, right? We both believe that. Who else is next on that list?
Okay.
And it could be any player, any position, on the field, offense or defense.
So, all right. So that's one way of describing what we're looking at. You'd also say who else is going to be huge impact.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I'm ready with my first pick.
Your first selection in our made-up impact draft.
Jamal Williams.
I knew you were going
to
go there.
It's the easy choice. You have to
do it.
It's like when you've got, you know, it's like most real drafts. I mean, there's a clear choice here, and if you don't make it, you're going to look like an idiot.
Yes.
If Jamal Williams goes down, we're in very deep doo doo. You know, especially at this point, you got Michael Elisa.
Doo-doo?
I did. It's a family podcast.
Yes, that is true.
You know, Michael Elisa is moving over to linebacker. I know you got Hine, you got Lasique in there, but come on. we lose Jamal Williams, we've got trouble.
Well, and we saw that last year, right? When he's not 100%, that running game looks totally different. When mm-hmm. you've got Hill and Williams hitting those holes, it is a sight to behold. And he might develop into that guy. I don't know. And Brown is a very nice back, and Lasique can do some things. But I'm with you. That's big.
Yeah.
All right. I am going to shock you with my pick, Matt. Absolutely right. Shock you. I'm going to take Braden Kersley. Okay. And here's why. We need one of these offensive linemen to blossom into a beast of an offensive lineman. And I think Kersley is that guy. So, okay. To me, if he can't become that guy, or he becomes it and gets hurt, that would be of a massive blow to the Cougars, because I don't think we have enough depth to overcome that. But here you're talking about 6'4", 300 pounds, athletic, highly, highly recruited when he came to BYU by a lot of good programs. And to me, he's got it. We need him to blossom. Thoughts on my pick?
Well, I'm going to get to more of this in a minute. I agree with some of what you said about the line. I just think you picked the wrong guy.
Ah-ha! All right. Good, because I'm not going to pick two offensive linemen here.
That's right.
My next pick is Nick Kurtz, who we already spoke about. Though we talked about the depth, we need a game changer. Taysom Hill needs a game changer. And Nick Kurtz, if he can be that, I'm not saying he has to be as good as Mr. Hoffman. That's asking too much. But if he can be a true number one wide receiver and the other guys can fall into place, that's a big deal. All right, Matt, your pick.
All right. Well, I've already kind of alluded to where I'm going here.
Yes, and you have two picks in a row here.
Right. So actually, you know what? I'll wait. Actually, it doesn't matter which order I do them in. So let me do the O-lineman first.
Okay.
I think that O-line has been it's been a problem point for at least one, maybe if not a couple of seasons now in a row.
Yes.
And, you know, we need somebody with a mean streak. We need somebody who can with some athletic ability, who hits people, wants to punish people as an offensive lineman. We've had a couple, you know, Famika and I would place in that category, unfortunately injured, unable to continue his football career.
Yep.
I think the offensive lineman that leads that charge this year is freshman Tooney Kanuch.
No way. You did.
Yes, sir.
You did just do that.
Oh, but I did. I think he's going to dominate. Really? I think he's going to be a shining star in what has been the barren wilderness of offensive linemen.
Wow.
I am very excited about him. I'm excited about his move to the O-line. I think it's going to bring a different kind of a mentality to the position group. And I think that I think it's a move that the coaches are, especially when you talk about Anai last year, was talking about we're going to reinstall this culture of the offensive line. And I think this move is Anai trying to find a guy with the right attitude and bringing him into that position group. I'm very excited about that change.
Wow. I did not see that coming.
All right. I'm very excited about it.
I hear your excitement. I believe your excitement.
Yeah.
I believe it. So
it's going to be awesome.
6'2", 325 is what he's listed at. He redshirted last year, right?
Yeah. He was a redshirt D lineman.
Right. That's where he started out, but they definitely needed some depth. So good call, Matt. Good call. Okay, so your final third and final selection.
This one's tough.
Really shouldn't be.
Well, see, there's the easy pick here.
Okay, who's your easy pick?
The easy pick is Bronson.
Okay, but you're not going to take the easy pick because that's not what you do.
No, that's never what I do.
That is not what you do.
Yeah, but maybe I should.
Oh my gosh, you're killing me.
What should I do?
You're killing me.
I'm not. You know who I'm going to go with?
All right.
Trenton Tremell.
Really?
Yeah, I think we need him.
Trenton Tremell. So say more. Why?
I know. I'm picking a couple guys who didn't even play last year.
Yeah. But it is interesting. I think they're both worthy of talking about. So tell me more. Why Tremell?
I think it sounds to me, granted, all I've seen, you know, are some YouTube clips, and then, you know, you've got what you hear from the coaches. But I think this is a guy that brings a new dimension to the defensive backfield, and a skill set that we don't have. And I think him being hurt last year, the way he was, you know, at that point, what was it, like the first day of fall practice?
Yeah.
I think it hurt the defensive backfield a little bit.
Absolutely.
And they were able to recover. They recovered a lot better than anybody expected them to. But the fact that those guys, you know, who were the kind of the number twos, you know, we didn't have across the board in the defensive backfield everybody we wanted. But the fact that those guys played at the level they did makes me wonder how good is he? You know, if the backup were the backups were serviceable, if not, if it couldn't be said they exceeded expectations. So I want to know how good is this guy really?
Well,
and the coaches seem really high on him.
Yeah, Mendenhall has mentioned him a couple times already through spring camp, talking about him. And obviously Jordan Johnson coming back as well, right? So one of the things that is the silver lining out of those injuries, right, is the fact that you had a chance for some other guys to get some playing time. The most important of all that group was maybe Robertson Daniel, who, you know, played mostly cornerback and will be a safety this year and ended up during the end of the year playing safety as well. Awesome tackler, you know, junior college transfer. But now all of a sudden I look at this group, Matt, and you've hit it with Tremel. I think it's a good pick. This group looks good, right? Bills at the cat, Daniel at the free safety, and then two corners that, in theory, could be top shelf type of corners, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes a big difference. So nice.
And if he stays healthy, we may end up with some depth. You know, as you were alluding to a minute ago, we could have some depth at that position in 2014.
Yeah.
When was the last time we had that?
Never. And Pove, you know, though made a lot of mistakes, he got playing time last year and got better throughout the year. So now you've got a backup with experience. So yep. That if Trammell or Johnson go down, you have a guy either in Robertson Daniel, if you feel comfortable with some of his backups at free safety, he can flip over there, or Povey both had playing time there last season. So, nice pick. I can't believe I even am saying that to you, but I am.
I couldn't stay away.
You couldn't stay away. Well, I'm going to pick one that's also going to seem a little unconventional as well. A player that, you know, a position that doesn't get much attention, and it's senior defensive lineman Marquez Johnson.
Oh, yes.
So when you lose somebody like Manu Maliuna, okay, who, quite frankly, I think people don't understand how important he was to the defense last year. I just don't think I think it's something that is just underappreciated.
It's right? Easy to overlook the D-line.
Yes. If Marquez Johnson can be that kind of disruptive force, which at times last year when he was playing either as part of the rotation or when Manu Maliuna was dinged up, he showed flashes of that. He showed flashes. And, you know, he had a big game against Nevada. He had a good game against Middle Tennessee and a decent game against Notre Dame. He has shown flashes. Now, whether he can put that together and be that disruptive force, but we really don't have, I don't see anybody behind him and think, well, if he falls off, there's somebody who's ready to step in. The other guys have potential, but not experience, right?
Right.
So I think he is also a key player. I was going to say the punter, which right now Lasique is listed as the backup punter.
Oh, boy.
And I know that Taysom Hill did a little punting last year, too, if you remember. I'm not really looking forward to that. The quick kick. Matt, there's a couple things we have not talked about. Kick returns and punt returns. So kick return, Hine and Lasique will be back. We assume they'll be there, right? And maybe one of these speedsters coming in takes time. Punt return, Falslev, Hoffman, and Ridley were the punt return disaster last year, okay?
Mm-hmm.
do we have a difference maker in punt return, or is it going to be just somebody out there waving their hand and catching the ball?
I don't think we know yet. Mm. I think it's going to be one of these new guys coming in with some speed is going to be the one who steps into that role.
I want Trey Dye.
Oh, we all want Trey Dye, right? We want Trey Dye to just go out there and light it up. And awesome. How awesome would that be?
That'd be great.
But I think it's going to be one of those guys, and then we'll have to play. We'll have to let it play out and see if there's somebody in there with that breakaway capability.
Amen, brother. All right, so that's it for us for spring football for this week. There will be much more spring football in the weeks to come. There's no doubt of that. So, Matt, let's flip over to basketball, okay? So this is Sunday night. Yesterday, BYU beats Loyola Marymount. Any takeaways from that game for you?
Same old, same old. You know, get up early on a team, let them come back at near halftime, and then work the second half to kind of keep them at bay.
Yep.
We've seen this storyline play out over and over again with this team, and we'd love to see them, you know, hold on to one of those big leads. But a win's a win, and they all count.
Well, and the thing we didn't see play out, which had happened a couple times, is then blowing the game.
Right, the total implosion.
So they didn't have that. Anson Winder is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
His defense on the perimeter is great. My biggest takeaway is not really a takeaway, but an interpretation, if you will. This streak of made three-pointers, and people are making a big deal about, they didn't make any three-pointers. What's the difference between making zero three-pointers and making one, which they have done a bunch of times during the streak? Statistically, it's nothing. Calm down, people.
It's just 3 points.
Down. Yeah, it's 3 points, exactly. That's it, right? And people just need to relax. It had nothing to do with the outcome of the game, and they could win another game without hitting a three. Now, I don't think they will have another game where they don't hit a three, because there's too many good shooters on the team. It's just a fluke of statistics. It's not, to me, it's not meaningful. Plus, the three has not been a big part of BYU's offensive success this year, not like it has in the past.
And look, I think that's the key right there. If the offense isn't designed to create that as an opportunity, it's not, you know, it's not part of the, it's not a cornerstone of the game for them right now.
No.
And that might have something to do with the fact that you don't have somebody out there who's draining them from, you know, NBA three-point land.
No.
Consistently, right?
Except when Carlino goes off.
Right.
So the other takeaway for me is that they have, I believe in them as much as I did last week, that they will win this tournament. I believe they win the tournament. Matt, do you feel any differently than you did when on the podcast last week you said they were not going to win the tournament?
Gonzaga looked pretty vulnerable to me last night.
Oy, vulnerable? They looked terrible.
Yeah, they probably should have lost that game.
They should have lost that game. They looked downright terrible. So that's Santa Clara that they beat by two. So, I mean, they, you know, and they can have a bad game and then blow out St. Mary's and us, right? That can happen. But if I'm, my confidence level in them, I already predicted that St. Mary's was going to beat them on Monday night. I am not changing that prediction. I think St. Mary's wins and then BYU wins in the final. Are you changing your cowardly prediction that Gonzaga wins this whole tournament?
No.
So here's the bad part, Matt. If Gonzaga loses to St. Mary's and BYU loses either their game against San Francisco or against St. Mary's in the title game, we don't make the tournament.
That's correct.
They're not putting three teams in from the West Coast Conference. And I think Gonzaga is safely in the tournament based on their season. That's the nightmare scenario right there, is Gonzaga does not win the tournament, but neither does BYU. Welcome, NIT. Welcome, NIT.
Hey, the NIT is a nice tournament.
The NIT is a nice tournament. It can be nice. It can be nice. So Matt, any other takeaways from that game or the tournament? Anything else you'd like to share before we talk a little bit more about college basketball?
You know, I think one thing that would be fun one year is to go out and see the tournament.
That would be fun.
Just following people who are out there at the games. Looks like it's a good, I mean, obviously it's Vegas. It's a fun town. But I think it'd be cool to go out one year and do that.
Yeah, it would be a lot of fun to go do that some year. I mean, I have never been to a basketball conference tournament that the Cougars played in. So that would be a lot of fun. And plus, you know, maybe we could make a trip out of it and then drive down to Arizona and see spring training games.
Oh, stop it.
The problem is it's in the wrong side of the country. We both want to be in Florida to see the Nats and the Red Sox, but
right.
What are you going to do?
Go to Florida.
Yeah, probably.
I'm pretty sure planes fly from Las Vegas to Florida.
I don't believe that's true. I don't believe that's true. You have to make two connections. It's two vacation destinations. Who goes from Vegas to Florida? Old people?
Yeah.
Wait a second.
Yeah, think about that.
Yeah.
Be a plane full of old people.
just lots of people coming from Florida to gamble and going home without money. Yeah, it's a sad tale, Matt. It's a sad, sad, sad tale. Going back to Del Boca Vista.
Oh, man.
Going back to Del Boca Vista. All right. So, Matt, I watched something very depressing yesterday.
Oh, no.
Why would I watch something depressing, you ask?
Because you're a glutton for punishment?
Something like that. I watched the Duke-North Carolina game, which was entertaining because it's Duke-North Carolina. And I watched Mr. Jabari Parker. You might have heard of Mr. Jabari Parker. He's quite good at basketball.
Yeah, the name sounds familiar.
Yes, yes. And he's had a good freshman season, you know. Maybe not the world-beater season some people predicted, but certainly a very good season. So, Matt, that depressed me, quite frankly. It absolutely depressed me.
Well, let's talk about that. Why do you think it made you feel that way?
Well, Matt, it made me feel that way because I just imagined for a moment I saw him in a different shade of blue and white and with Tyler Hawes as his teammate and Eric Mika. And I saw that 30-point, 11-rebound game against the Tar Heels being a 42-point, 15-rebound game against somebody in the Mountain West Coast Conference. And I thought, my gosh, we'd be a Sweet 16 team, maybe Elite Eight. And we're not.
No, it just wasn't to be.
I know. I shouldn't be depressed about it because, quite frankly, you and I were always pretty realistic thinking that he would not be a Cougar. We hoped, but our predictions were that he would not be a Cougar.
No, and honestly, I think, you know, he did the right thing by kind of playing it out and looking. I don't think there was ever really a chance.
I mean, when you can go play for, I know some of you probably hate Mike Krzyzewski, and when, if you do, you're either a Tar Heel or kind of being silly, right? He is a phenomenal basketball coach, and Parker had the chance to go play for him, right? And nothing right. against Dave Rose. This isn't a slight to Dave Rose, despite the I Hate Dave Rose camp seems to be out in force this season. He is also a very good basketball coach, but he's not Coach K, right? And that's no slight to the man. But watching Parker, you know, my wife was watching the game. She is not a huge sports fan. And after he made a play, she's like, whoa, who is that guy? I'm like, thanks. Thanks for rubbing it in.
Oh, that hurts a little bit.
Who is that guy? So, Matt.
Who's that guy?
Who is that guy? Well, it's kind of like when we walked out of the first Batman movie, and she kept talking about how good-looking Christian Bale was.
That's just awkward.
Awkward. I'm standing right here.
You know, I can hear you right now, right?
Katie Holmes is cute.
Not the same.
So anyway, Matt, projecting 5-10 years out, Jabari Parker MVP candidate or just really, really good NBA player?
Really, really good NBA player.
MVP candidate.
10 years from now, dude, he could be retired 10 years from now.
Maybe I should say 5 or 6 years from now. But I look at. Durant as a player he could be like. You know, his shot is still like he got this kind of long drive shot to him that but he did hit 2 out of 4 threes yesterday against the Tar Heels. But man, I'm all in on Jabari Parker. I'm all in. As long as he doesn't play for the Lakers or Knicks, that team will probably, his team will become my second favorite team to the Celtics.
You know what would really blow people's minds? If somehow he ended up on the Bulls.
Well, you know, it is possible.
It would be a strange, I'm just saying it would be a strange universe for a lot of BYU fans.
You basically have all these BYU fans getting Bulls stuff. Because yeah. I think most BYU fans are not, it's not like the Michigan State fans and some of the other fans that like are like, feel like Parker dissed them. Like, I don't get that feeling for most BYU fans. Do you?
No. I think most BYU fans, at least those who are really paying attention, they saw this coming.
But Chicago's not going to get them because they're obviously a playoff team. But you know who's a possibility, Matt? They would need some bouncing of the balls. Some maybe fate to come in, or maybe Adam Silver to cheat and give them that is the Boston Celtics. Oh, they're not a playoff team. They're a lottery team. They will be a lottery team unless they're stupid and start winning again, which they might, you know. But I look at Boston and I say, he'd look good in green, Matt. He'd look good in green.
It's not easy being green.
It would be pretty funny if the Jazz got him, though.
Oh, that's what I thought you were going to say. And then you're going
to... I don't care about...
Then you're just baiting people at that point.
Half of our listeners are Jazz fans, so I don't want to say I don't care about the Jazz, but... you know, I'm just ambivalent towards the Jazz, I guess. I just don't want him on the Lakers. I mean, right now, they have one of the worst records in basketball, and they're likely, if he goes into the draft, a team that could have a shot at him.
Yeah.
I also don't want him in Sacramento, because I don't like them anymore.
Agreed.
Never really liked him. I'm just kidding. We got a couple of tweets and emails about people saying, hey, stop hating on our Kings. Hey. You lost out on the Jimmer. So, Matt, Jimmer update. Okay, so he gets traded. We're all excited about that, right?
Yay.
He goes to the Chicago Bulls, a playoff-bound team. Okay? And in his first game, when we talked about he had had just one game, and he played 3 minutes, and we were like, hey, don't worry about it. 3 minutes, it's not a big deal. You know... And now he hasn't played. He played 3 minutes the next game, and he's had donuts. So let me ask you this.
Donuts.
Donuts. Did he pick the wrong place? Didn't he pick the wrong place? He hasn't. He's hardly playing.
Yeah, but where else are you going
to
go?
Go to the Knicks. Go to the Celtics. I don't know.
Go to the Knicks. That's a dumpster fire.
It doesn't matter.
An absolute dumpster fire.
You're going for a few months. You're going for a few months. That's all you're doing. He's going for a few months.
Yeah, but you don't want to go to Boston. Boston's trying to tank.
So what? So what? That means you're going to get tons of minutes. This is your chance to earn a contract for the next year. You know? This is your chance, and instead, you've played 6 minutes in four games. You've taken 1 3-pointer. You know, and maybe they'll work him into the rotation at some point, but I'm not feeling overly optimistic if I'm a Jimmer fan, which I happen to be. Did not play. Coach's decision is a bad thing to have. It's a bad thing to have. Heinrich, Butler... I mean, this was even an overtime game, was it? No, it wasn't an overtime game, the last loss. But they're playing four guards ahead of him, including Tony Snell. Not good. Not good. Tony Snell, Matt. That's who's playing ahead of him.
It's a tough situation.
It's a tough situation, but not what we had hoped. Not what we had hoped. All right, Matt, well... We will be back next week to talk about BYU being in the NCAA tournament after they win the West Coast Conference tournament, right?
Okay.
Or we'll be talking about who they might host in the first round of the NIT. but regardless,
here's rooting for Utah.
And here's this, Matt. We will have next week the most anticipated podcast of the year. People love this podcast, Matt. Our Major League Baseball preview show.
Oh,
people love it. People just line up waiting to download it. Download now, please. People get very excited about that. But we're doing it, even if some of you aren't excited and you hate baseball. Because if you hate baseball, you hate America.
There's something wrong with you.
That's all I have to say. It's America's pastime. It's in their slogan. It has to be true. Anyway, we'll do our little show next week. But you got a lot of spring football this week. We probably won't do a whole lot of that next week. But in a few weeks, we'll get back to some spring football. We'll talk a lot of basketball next week. But thanks, guys, for listening. As always, thanks for downloading. And we will catch you next time.
Yo, Cougars.
God, where were you when I needed you?